Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
We had almost half of the country with states reporting at least some D3 or D4.
USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey.
That has changed dramatically. And now, as we go to January 30th of 2024, we see D3 or D4 coverage, those extreme and exceptional drought levels, in just 11 states. And for many of those, it's just a fractional percentage. So, for example, less than a percentage point of D3 to D4 coverage now in Kansas, Arkansas, and Minnesota. We still do have some drought out there. It's not totally gone. So New Mexico, at this point, leads the country in D3 to D4 coverage, 29%. Of New Mexico, still seeing those higher levels of drought. Also above the 10% mark, we have Iowa, 19%, Louisiana, 15%, and Mississippi at 13%.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
We talk a lot about protecting family farms, and the catfish industry is in places like Arkansas, Mississippi, Louisiana.
Ranking member of the Senate Ag Committee from Arkansas, Dr. John Bozeman.
What the Commerce Department is doing is making it easier for these exports to come in from Asia. And, you know, these things are grown in the Mekong Delta. We talk a lot about helping the family farmer, but it seems like all of the things that we put in place, the rules, the regulations, the list goes on and on, seem to make it harder and harder for them to make a living. And so this is wrong, and we're going to be fighting it. And certainly the catfish farmers are very concerned about it, because how do you compete with essentially no labor cost or minimal labor cost, and then the conditions that they're raised in? So, this is critical. I'm really disappointed in the administration. What we should be doing, instead of allowing it, making it much easier, making it impossible for us to compete against countries like this, we should be striking fair trade deals throughout the world. We're not doing that. It's something that the administration doesn't like, because the unions don't like it. And so as a result, we're really slipping on trade. The last couple of years, we've had not for the first time ever, but it's highly, highly unusual for us to run a trade deficit in agriculture. Agriculture has always been the bright star. But because of working, the reverse deals of this, making this stuff easier to come in that shouldn't be coming in, and then, again, not working hard to get the deals made with other countries so that we can continue to export. 40% of the product in Arkansas is exported. Exports are the lifeblood of agriculture for America. So it's just the opposite of what we ought to be doing.
Maybe no movement on trade, but what about the weather? Matt Makins is with Makins Weather, Denver, Colorado.
Last year on a similar stage, I said, hey, we're headed toward an El Nino, and there was a group right about there that cheered. This year, we're headed toward a La Nina. Why is nobody cheering out there? All right, quick refresher, right? Other than the seasons, the next biggest driver to our weather is El Nino or La Nina. On these maps, the top one, La Nina, all we're doing is we're cooling off a bit of ocean. It's a big chunk. From South America to Southeast Asia. Right now, we're actually the bottom picture. We're El Nino. We warmed that area up since last year. What does this do? You warm an area of ocean, it's like warming up your pot of water on your stove. You're adding steam. You're punching that atmosphere. You do that strongly enough, you send ripples in the atmosphere downstream. And that impacts all of us in one way. In this case, we're punching that atmosphere over the Pacific. That sends a storm flow pretty close to Hawaii, right across the southern states. Gives a lot of water to the south. I know if you're in the southeast, you're in a drought. We're trying to work on that. But with an El Nino, that can happen. The left is where we're headed. Right back to a La Nina next year. So rather than getting these wet storms from California across the southern states, we're going to bring in a lot more cold. Next winter will be much colder, and in some cases wetter for the northern states. Drought returns to the southern states.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
Some years historically that we use kind of flirted around neutral for a while. A lot of them went La Nina.
Matt Makins with Makins Weather in Denver, Colorado.
So there are two scenarios. Scenario one is across the top for spring, summer, and fall. Scenario two is across the bottom, spring, summer, fall. Neither one of those includes El Nino. To stay in neutral this summer would actually be beneficial for the country, beneficial for the industry. It would spread water out. Here's where the stars align, if you will, the years align for this year. There's your most probable case, and these graphics are on that handout that you sat on. They're at the very bottom, same graphic. Here's the most likely scenario. This El Nino is pretty much peaked. It's weakening. This spring is neutral. That spreads water from the south into the northern plains. But with a La Nina in place by summer, no, the impact isn't huge just yet, but you see the trend progressing as you go forward in time. Drier areas increase for the central and southern plains. We start to send that moisture back to the north. Pacific Northwest, into Montana, Wyoming, and the Rockies, you start to get your water coming back as La Nina comes into this transition. If I'm in the panhandle of Texas or Oklahoma, I'm going to be like, we had some good moisture recently. But then May, June, and July, you're talking to your friends, you're like, well, the last rain was 10 days ago. Last rain was 2 weeks ago. You're going to start to see that transition happening. But if you're northern plains, you're Midwest, you're going to say, oh, we're starting to get some rains are starting to increase for us. As I mentioned earlier, the corn situation to start off, the soil is dry. It is now. Not much recovery. So we'll probably hear some topics about slow start or concerns with the corn for the year. But we'll start to spread moisture in later on. Where could you see things change? Where could you yell at me in July and say, well, Matt, in February you said this? Where could things change in this? Maybe the La Nina doesn't come in roaring like I think it will. Then we'd have that neutral summer and it'd spread moisture out for a lot more folks. That would be a potential area. Fall, maybe we get so much water in Texas that we can hold off the drought a bit. That's possible. I'm not considering it, but that would be possible. The only other thing, and for a lot of folks, is that La Nina summer map in the middle. All the green for the southwest. A southwest monsoon can make or break a lot of folks from Mexico into the southwestern U.S. History suggests it will be robust. I don't know that that's true. That could be another area where you're going to be like, you could be mad. Matt, you said monsoon would be great. Didn't pan out. So those would be my concerns going forward. My final concern is the duration of this La Nina. It probably comes back not just 1 year, but multiple years. So El Nino's impact is nearly over. We've had favorable moisture, helping spring growth. That'll carry over into our summers for a lot of us. Beware of the spring cold that may hit you, especially the mid to latter part of February in the central and southern plains. It's going to come through with moisture. Corn needs to benefit from timely moisture early, and it will improve as the season goes on. And then the drought will come back. Well, we're not totally done with the drought across the south. So where the drought is in March, it starts to grow from there across the southern states.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
If everything goes where we lose a little acres, but we have a little better yield, beginning stocks are up 800 million bushels, we wouldn't expect a real dramatic price increase heading into 2024.
Troy Appelhans with Cattle Facts at the annual Ag Outlook Seminar looking at the price projections for corn.
Matter of fact, on average, we would expect corn prices, meaning spot corn futures, to be down about 65 cents on average from 2023 to right around that $5 area. We could have a rally going into the spring. You know, the old adage is you kill a corn crop twice before every harvest. So we would expect to see some strength going into spring, especially the time that we start to see the acres report come out, or as we go into the summer and if it dries up a little bit. If you look at this chart from where we are today with corn, spot corn futures hanging around that 450 area, and you start to see a market that moves towards 550, that would be about a 24% rally from the lows. Historically, that's a pretty big rally. As we go into the second half of the year, we get the yield, 179, you have 2 million less acres. You know, you could see a market come back towards that $4 as we get into the second half of 2024 or into that harvest period of time.
Apple Hans with price projections for soybeans.
Corn has gone into that comfortable stocks to use position. And soybeans still are in a, relatively speaking, a tight stocks to use position. We have a lot of that renewable diesel coming online over the course of the next couple of years. Soybean crush is record high. And soybean exports have moved lower to offset that record high soybean crush because we've had that big Brazilian soybean crop. So if we have 2 million more soybean acres and you have yield right around 52, you can see stocks to use grow, but ultimately they're still relatively speaking tight. And so we'll be watching the soybean market because that would be the driver if we see the corn market move above expectations, even with 2 million less acres or 179 yield.
What's the outlook this year for hay?
2022, we had the smallest stocks and the smallest hay production since the 1950s. And you can see the prices respond on this chart. Now we've had 2 years or 1 year of a slightly increase, about 8% increase in hay production. We're expecting to see another increase in hay production here in 2024. And as a result, you could see the corn market or the hay market push a little higher into the spring along with the corn market, but ultimately average about $30 below year-ago levels in 2024.
And finally, for wheat,
we do have 2 million less wheat acres, winter wheat acres this year. But if you look at this chart globally, the U.S. produces about 7% of the world's wheat. Wheat is a lot more of a global commodity. Where the U.S. produces about, you know, 30-32% of the world's corn, we only produce about 7% of the world's wheat. Wheat globally is in a comfortable position. Ukraine and Russia, they continue to be at war, but they continue to export wheat. So a couple years ago when that war started, that was the concern, is that Russia and Ukraine wouldn't be able to export wheat, and we would see those tighter stocks to use numbers or the lack of exports show up, but that hasn't been the case. So wheat's in a comfortable position as well.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
We're at CattleCon. It's cattle every day, all day, you know.
Former administrator of USDA's Farm Service Agency during the Trump administration, Richard Fordyce.
When we think about that feed input, you know, in the cattle sector, and, you know, where does that feed come from? You know, how is it being raised? Will there be enough this year? What's the price going to be, right, for cattle producers? I would say, let me go back 20 years ago when, you know, a lot of seed companies were investing hundreds of millions of dollars developing seed trait technology that makes that plant more resilient in a, you know, in a bad weather year. And, you know, Tony, you know, we farm in Northwest Missouri, and we had two hailstorms. We had a derecho, and it was just really, really dry for a big part of the growing season. And we grew record yielding corn in that environment. And I know, you know, we've talked a little bit before this, but this fall when we were harvesting corn on one side of the fence, you know, literally harvesting 215 bushel corn across the fence, the pasture was so dry you could shoot pool on it. And it made me wonder about the investment that has been for two decades or more that's gone into seed trait technology, yet we've not done a really good job to really prioritize forage research and making forage resilient. But the seed trait technology, I think, and the developments and advancements in that, I think, are really good news for cattle producers because, as I said earlier, you're not going to see those big volatile spikes in prices. You know, Chicago traders, when it's dry at my farm, they're not going to get nervous and, you know, watch that price spike, you know, for a week straight. So I think it's taken volatility out of the market for on that feed input side for cattle producers. And it just offers, I think, some reassurance that, you know, that feed will be there. It may not be like extremely close regionally, but it's not going to be far away where there's going to be ample access to feed.
But what's on his radar? In other words, as a producer, what's he watching for?
So thinking about what is that farm bill going to look like? What are the components in that farm bill that might be different that, you know, that can be beneficial not only to, you know, to crop farmers, but also livestock producers? What programs are going to be in there to assist during disasters? Those kinds of things I think we're looking at, you know, from that farm bill. We're in a presidential election year. I mean, things get weird, from a national perspective during a presidential election. What is that going to look like, right? Who's going to win the presidential election, and then the fallout that happens after that, and how things can change within the federal government? Always weather, right? Like, weather is always a thing that we don't know. We can't predict that. We don't know what it's going to look like. I mean, national weather folks, you know, have said it might be the drought might be relaxed in some of the places where it's been dry. Certainly we're praying for that to happen, right? There's places that have been in drought for 3 years. We got to get that turned around. And I just think that, again, you know, we're at CattleCon, and this is a cattle convention. But I think what's really going to be interesting to watch, and there is some really neat stuff here, Tony, is just how, like, really smart people that want to support, in this case, the cattle industry, or really smart people that are supporting the crop side of farming, the innovations that are coming, the way they think about how can we do this better? How can we do this more economically? How can we do this with less inputs? And I think all of those are good news. They're good news for ag producers, and they're good news for folks just generally involved in agriculture. And ultimately, they're good for people who eat, right?
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
See those black boxes? That's the same El Nino region. To be red in there, that means the ocean is warmer than average.
From the annual Cattle Facts Ag Outlook Seminar, meteorologist Matt Makins.
This is last year. On this stage, well, not this stage, the one in New Orleans, but that was the picture last year. And I said, look at that far right tiny box right next to South America. That's going to warm up first, and then the others will warm up as we go to El Nino. Let's go back to today's map. See that tiny little box? It's already starting to cool off. La Nina is starting to develop as we speak today. And it will spread through the other regions as we go forward in time. When a weather person talks about El Nino or La Nina, and you see the official forecast, it's coming from that highlighted box right there. There are multiple regions. We call them different things. I won't bore you with that today, but see me at the Cattle Facts booth and I can bore you to death. But that's the main region right there. If you hear official forecasts from Climate Prediction Center, NOAA, wherever it may be, it's probably coming from ocean temperatures in that box. And all we're worried about is that area colder than average or warmer than average?
What's the first half of this year look like?
February through April is shown. If you're northwest, if you're north, if you're northeast, you'll be warmer than average. Central Plains down through Texas to Florida, there'll be areas that are cooler than normal for the next 3 months. Let's advance to March through May. This is the spring, obviously. We're starting to heat everything up to the north. Starting to bring the warmth back across the south. April through June, Canada's very warm. Northern states, very warm. We're still moderate, if you want to call it that, across the south. And as you get into May and July, we start to bring that heat back down the Mississippi, and we're going to start to build it across the southern U.S. At the same time, we're going to dry things out. Speaking of drying things out for the south, here is the four panels for precip over the same months. To be browns, drier than average, greens, wetter than average. We'll take a closer look at this in a minute. But the trend will be, and you can start to see it here, pretty wet for the west, central states, southern states, the southeast at times. And what happens? We begin to reverse everything. We take that moisture, we start to send it up north, and we replace it with drought back across the south. Here's closer maps for anybody taking pictures. Or you can come by the booth. I'll just give you the graphics there. But February through April, pretty wet. And a lot of that signal for Colorado, Wyoming, Nebraska, western Kansas, that's coming this weekend. Super soaker coming in just a few days. Hopefully it doesn't delay your travel getting home. As you look March through May, we're starting to shrink down those deeper greens. But we still have favored precip across the south and the central plains. Forages, wheat, oats, grasses, hay. We've got a strong start to the year, assuming you're not too wet. We got a strong start to the year, which we didn't have last year. With these maps, if you put side by side the one for February, March, April, cooler than average for the central and southern plains and wetter than average. If you're calving soon, or now or soon, your risk of cold impact on those calves is the highest over the next 6 weeks or so. There's April through June. We're starting to shrink down the moisture and we're starting to increase the dry areas across the south, but we're starting to send that moisture back to the north and up into Canada too. The outlook for the prairies in Canada, bleak over the next, few weeks, but better toward May, okay in June. It'd be nice to shift some of that into April. And if this La Nina increases, how quickly it wants to arrive, we'll do that.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
So at March, we'll have the prospective plantings report. That'll be the first key watch item that we have to pay attention to.
Troy Appelhans with Cattle Facts at the annual Ag Outlook Seminar.
It's our forecast that we're going to see a little bit less principal crop acres, from 319 million acres back down to like 317 million acres. And we're probably going to see a few less corn acres as well, something like 2 million less corn acres. That's going to be offset with an increase in soybean acres of right around 2 million acres. We already had winter wheat seedings down a little over 2 million acres, so spring wheat is expected to be relatively flat. Ultimately, that's the first thing that we're going to pay attention to, because that's going to set the tone heading into the summer. As Matt talked about, we could run into some dry conditions. So do we see a 2 million acre decrease, or is it a little bit more than that? That'll be the first thing we're paying attention to. The next thing will be yield, because as we go into the summer, we'll have the acres in the March report, and then we'll have the acres report in June, and we'll start heading into July, and we'll be paying attention to yield. If you look at the last five years, we've seen yield run about 2.5% below the long-term trend. The 5 years prior to that, you had yield run about 3.5% above that long-term trend. Given the weather forecasts, we're not calling for a trend line yield. We would expect to see yield continue to be a new record, but right around that 179 bushels per acre on a U.S. average basis. So if that's the case, we see a little 2 million less acres, and we see yield still running about 2.5% below trend, we ultimately come back to the balance sheet. And there's a lot of data on this, and you can see that when you look through there, you do see a lot of green on that right-hand column. You have a little less acres, yield a little bit bigger. You ultimately, what the driving factor for this year is going to be is that beginning stocks number. That beginning stocks number is up about 800 million bushels from the year prior. So even if we lose 2 or possibly 3 million acres on the corn side, you're still in a comfortable stocks to use position. China really hasn't been buying any corn. They had a near record production last year. You know, when we had those China step into the market, there was a few different things that have been going on. The first one was ASF. They banned feeding food waste. That reduced their feed by about 20%. Then they had a shorter crop, so they stepped into the market. On the ethanol side, we had record ethanol production in 2017. We've come back a little bit from those COVID lows, and we would expect to see ethanol production increase a little bit, but that's really a stable and mature type input, or stable and mature type demand item. On the exports, if you're talking about a 100 million bushel increase in exports, up there towards 2.2 billion acres, that would be roughly the sixth biggest export number we've had in history. So it's not a huge export number, but it is at the upper end of the range. And with this type of supply, we would expect to see exports pick up. Ultimately, that would bring your stocks to use from that 14.8% up there towards 16.5%. So you can see here that as we go through the summer, we still need to pay attention to acres. We still need to pay attention to yield, but we should continue to see stocks to use remain in a comfortable position.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Significant storminess in January equated to dramatic reductions in drought coverage during the month. USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey says over 23.5% of the country was covered by drought as of January 30th.
That is down 9.5 percentage points from what we saw on January 2nd when drought coverage was just shy of 33%. That also is down from a recent peak of slightly more than 40% of the country in drought as recently as early October of 2023.
Yet most notable.
That 23.5% of the country in drought, that is the lowest U.S. drought coverage since early June of 2023.
Similar stories are noted for extreme and exceptional drought, D3 and D4 coverage during the same time period, reaching their lowest levels since last June.
We have only two remaining pockets of exceptional drought in the country across New Mexico and Mississippi.
I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.